Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from text 33, chapter 19, canto 8 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter titled Lord Vamanadeva Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. Please repeat. Shri Bikramar Imalokan Vishvakaya Kamishyati Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Mudha Vartishya Shekatam Vishvakaya Kamishyati Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Mudhavartishyashekatam Shubhikramarimalokam Vishvakayakamishyati Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Mudhavartishyasekatam. Bikramarimalokam Vishvakaya Kamishyati Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Mudhavartishyasekatam Vishvakaya Kamishyati Sarvasvam Mudhavartishyasekatam Shri Bikramarimalokam Vishvakaya Kamishyati Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Mudhavartishyasekatam. Word for word. Should be three. Kamai by steps. Iman all these. Lokan three planetary systems. Vishvakayaha becoming the universal form. Kamishyati gradually he will expand. Sarvasvam, everything. Vishnave, unto Lord Vishnu. Dattva, after giving charity. Mudha, oh you rascal. Vartishyase, you will execute your means of livelihood. Katam, how? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity, but when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. You are a rascal. You do not know what a great mistake you have made. After giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you will have no means of livelihood. How then shall you live? Purport. Bali Maharaj might argue that he had promised only 3 steps of land, but Shukracharya, being a very learned Brahmana, immediately understood that this was a plan of Hari, who had falsely appeared there as a brahmachari. The words mudha vartishyase katam reveal that Shukracharya was a Brahmana of the priestly caste class. Such priestly Brahmanas are mostly interested in receiving remuneration from their disciples. Therefore, when Shukracharya saw that Bali Maharaj had risked all of his possessions, he understood that this would cause havoc not only to the king, but also to the family of Shukracharya, who was dependent on Maharaj Bali's mercy. This is the difference between a Vaishnava and a Smartha Brahmana. A Smartha Brahmana is always interested in material profit, whereas a Vaishnava is interested only in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the statements of Shukracharya, it appears that he was in all respects a Smartha Brahmana, interested only in personal gain. Om Aganti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Romapad Swami Niti Namine Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Pashyata Deshataine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Thank you everyone for being here. Like to start out requesting the Vaishnavas to be merciful to me. I'm not super learned in Srimad Bhagavatam, but I'm being asked to give class. Please bear with me and feel free to correct me if I make any mistakes or things like that on the Vyasa Sun. Start. I don't really feel qualified to comment on Shukracharya's position. He's kind of interesting. I find it interesting. I don't completely understand his position because he's very much learned. He's a spiritual master. Even so much so that he's even seeing the Lord face to face, Lord Vamanadeva. So I don't really want to comment on his state of consciousness, but at the same time, I have to analyze the text. It appears that he has some mistaken conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's calling by his calling Bali Maharaj a fool for offering him 3 steps of land. It shows that he has some misunderstanding of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is and what is the result of surrendering unto him. So even though he's a spiritual master of the demons, and even demigods too, I believe. It appears that he doesn't really have a good understanding of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe he didn't get a copy of the Bhagavad Gita. But I'm not sure. But I'm going to go over some texts from the Bhagavad Gita in reference to this verse. And then also compare that to our own state of consciousness. compared to why we don't also, we're not ready to surrender everything to Krishna, because we have some of these tendencies of Shukracharya, to be engaged in such a way, for our own personal benefit, as Prabhupada says, in the purport, and not fully surrendered, which is due to our anartas and our material covering. So I wanted to go over some points that I remember from Prabhupada Maharaj's retreat, Anartha Nivritti, and then some points from the Bhagavad Gita. And hopefully it will all be cohesive and understandable. So first of all, I want to say some verses from the Bhagavad Gita, about this misunderstanding of what happens when you surrender to Krishna. The first one is Bhagavad Gita 2:51. So I'll read the Sanskrit and the English translation. Karmajam buddhiyuktahi phalam tyaktva manishanaha janma bandha vinirmukta padam gajantyanamayam. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death, and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. So, padam gajantyanamayam. Padam means position, gajanti means they reach, and anamayam, without miseries. So, by engaging in devotional service to the Lord, you get to the state beyond all miseries. So this is where Bali Maharaj is heading, because he's engaging everything, karmajam buddhiyukta hi, and he's giving up the fruits of his activities, phalam tyaktva manishina, and he's going to receive janma bandha vinirmukta, liberation from birth and death, and padam gajantyanamayam, position beyond, he'll reach beyond all miseries, and he'll go back to Godhead. So it's a pretty nice benediction. Then the next verse in that relation to similar context of why we should surrender to Krishna like Bali Maharaj is doing, is 8:15. Mam upetya punarjanma dukkhalayam ashashvatam napnuvanti mahatmana sam siddhim paramam gita. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. So, this world is full of miseries, and by surrendering to Krishna, attaining Krishna, we never return to this place full of miseries. Whereas, if we are engaging in the spiritual process for material gain, like Shukracharya is doing, then we'll remain in the material miseries. So, if we have this understanding from Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear that we should follow in Bali Maharaj's footsteps and not listen to such a direction to not surrender to Krishna, which is what our mind is often telling us and the world is telling us. At this point, I want to speak about like our situation, like why we have this mentality, why we're not surrendering everything to Krishna, all at once, in comparison, or like especially in reference to the Anartha Nivritti retreat. Because this is why, like, why it's a gradual process is because we have anartas. Otherwise, even there's like so many glories, like we hear chanting the holy name even once, can liberate us or go back to Godhead just once. But why is this not going on? Is because we have anartas, that even anartas are so strong that they even block the spiritual potency of bhakti. So I wanted to go over a little bit of that, so we can get some more understanding from my notes. So we also have this a term that Maharaj used is Tattva Vibhrama, or illusion of the spiritual knowledge, or illusion, mistaken reality. Vibhrama, V means great, and Brahma means mistake, and Tattva means reality. We have a mistaken conception of reality, and that's the root of all offenses. And offenses are what lead to anartas, and anartas are what is covering us, our pure identity, the spirit souls. So there's four types of this tattva vibhrama that were spoken about. Illusion about one's own identity as spirit soul, and then illusion about Krishna's position, Vishnu tattva, and then illusion about sadhana, an illusion regarding subjects unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. So it seems like Shukracharya had a little bit of maybe he knew Krishna Vamanadeva's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he seems like maybe he had some illusion about the sadhana, about the process, the practice, of the results of that. I had that thought. But we also have this Tattva Vibhrama, and so that's the reason why we have to hear and chant, is to remove this Tattva Vibhrama. I can speak a little bit more from my notes. There's five results from these offenses that rise from Tattva Vibhrama, and one of them is crookedness, where one wants to present oneself different than one really is, and they have impure motives within relationships. I thought this one was especially pertaining to Shukracharya, where he's guiding Bali Maharaj, but he has personal motives to gain, because Bali Maharaj is supporting him, so that's why he's guiding him on a material level for his own purposes. And this also, the next one, next result, psychological manifestation of apradh, is ashraddha, or lack of faith. And it says even someone who even sees the Lord and sees the glory of the Lord, but still like rejects the position of the Lord, is someone who has lack of faith. And so that's definitely apparent in Shukracharya. He's even seen the Lord, but he doesn't have faith in the process of surrendering. Then the rest, not pertaining to Shukracharya, but we also have the internal absorption and things which destroy our faith in Krishna. So this is a manifestation of apradha again. This is an interesting point that Maharaj made, that offenses can activate our previous sinful propensities, like a trash bin on the computer. Like we put in the files in the trash, but if we kick offenses, we can bring them back out of the trash, and they become apparent again. So then the fourth one, manifestation, is laziness or lack of endeavor in sadhana bhakti, and one becomes weak in the practice and seeks to fulfill material needs. And then the last one is pride of one's achievement in devotional service. This arises from the offense of disrespecting devotees. So these are just things that we can be aware of. Maharaj, Ramapa Maharaj makes the point not to become anartha conscious, but to become Krishna conscious, because Krishna is the supreme pure. So if we associate with Krishna in the process of chanting and hearing, and not, we don't necessarily need to focus too much on the anarthas, but it's good to have a little bit of understanding of what to avoid and what's going on within ourselves. I'd like to speak then a little bit about Just this past weekend during Vyasa Puja, Ramapada Swami spoke about a lot of his talks were very practical of understanding how to practice, how to get from where we are, from being covered by anartas to becoming free from anartas. And he spoke about in terms of in using the term buddhi yoga. So this buddhi means intelligence, and this intelligence directs the mind. So my understanding is that we have to use our intelligence to keep at the process of sadhana bhakti, to keep constantly engaged, keep moving forward, because we're not at the level of pure devotion, but we should have the intelligence to understand how much we need to engage in the process of Krishna consciousness to get out of the ignorant position, contaminated and covered up by anartas. So that's my understanding of buddhi yoga. We use our intelligence to keep ourselves engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness. Maybe that's not a completely accurate understanding, but that's what I have so far in my understanding. So Maharaj spoke on the verse 10:10, which is a really powerful verse. So I wanted to go over that. So this is how we get free from, just a reminder of the topic. This is how we get free from the anarthas. This is the process, how to, this is what Maharaj was saying often. People are always asking how to do it, how to become Krishna conscious. I was wishing Jai Baladev would be here because he's constantly asking the same question. How do we not have this mentality? How do we do this? How do we do that? How to? So maybe he's listening online. But the answer is to engage in devotional service. And this verse is the essential verse of one of the four essential verses of Bhagavad Gita. So I'm going to go over that a little bit and go through it, so we can kind of have an understanding how to overcome our mentality to be like Shukracharya and not surrender to Krishna fully. So I'll read the Sanskrit 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So the word, I find the word priti purvakam to be especially important. Ramapada Maharaj said that in order to eradicate the anarthas, we have to properly engage in bhajana kriya. So he said that it's not a mechanical process, like we chant X amount of rounds and we remove Y amount of anarthas. It's just like you do it and you get it done and it happens. Maharaj says, like a vending machine. Like devotional service isn't like a vending machine. We have to consciously engage in the process, very attentively. We have to put our feelings into the process, put our emotions and our intelligence and everything we have. We have to get more and more absorbed, and then we get more purified. The more that we put in, the more we put our heart into it, the more that we get out, and the more purification we get in. Like you can sit, like there's that before Subal Prabhu, before we chant the or say the 10 offenses, he says you can go on chanting for millions of lifetimes or something that, and you won't get the love of Godhead that you desire if you're doing it like inattentively. You can go on for so long without getting the benefits, but if you put your heart into it, you can become Krishna conscious at once. Prabhupada says you can become Krishna conscious at once within a second, and one may not attain such a state even after millions of births. It is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. So we have to be very attentive and conscious and present where we're at in our practices, and totally get totally absorbed and put our heart into it. Like also in the verse 10:8, it says, Buddha Bhava Samanvita. They worship me with all their hearts. So it's not like you just come to the temple, and just go through the motions and then you get the benefits. It's completely how much you put into it, you get out. And Krishna reciprocates with how much we endeavor for him. Like on the Damodar pastime, that's two inches too short, two fingers too short, and one of them is our endeavor and another is Krishna's reciprocation. So this endeavor is like this putting ourselves into the practice, like with our heart, Buddha Bhava Samanvita, or Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. So Bhajatam is rendering devotional service, and Priti Purvakam is in loving ecstasy. So we may not be in loving ecstasy, but we have to work on at least the love part of putting our heart into it constantly and endeavoring with enthusiasm. With love, with feeling, and then we'll get the benefits. So I wanted to go over some examples, nice examples of devotees who show this Bhajatam Priti Purvagam. And one devotee who has always inspired me since hearing about him is Vishnu John Swami. I think he's a good example of Bhajatam Priti Purvagam. I was reading and hearing about him, and a quote he would always say was, everything we do should be saturated with love. And he was very much in this mood of saturated with love. The way that he chanted, he was basically just, he put so much feeling into it, so much of his heart, so much energy into his chanting, that he influenced so many people to come to Krishna consciousness. If you just listen to some of his bhajans from the past, I mean, you can just feel it even from now, like that he put so much into his singing. And it wasn't that he necessarily had like the most beautiful voice, but there's this mystical aspect of him of how much like feeling he put into his singing. And this feeling made so many devotees, and so he's a good example of this, how much you put into it, how much you get out. He traveled around with Radha Damodar, and the way that he worshipped Radha Damodar just like melted people's hearts too. The people that were traveling with him, everyone just totally went into ecstasy whenever anyone was around him. I met one devotee that was here, I think his name was Atendriya. He was speaking about traveling with Vishnu John Swami, and he like went into like a trance. Like when I asked him about it, he he was like, I can't even explain to you like the experience of what it was like, just like how absorbed Vishnu John Swami was, and it totally made everyone else get absorbed in that Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Another example of this also. Is the Harinam Ruchi group that came through. Their Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, they're only here for like 3 days, but like that 3 days of kirtan with them was like on another level of kirtan than like our group like can attain on our own for like with so much effort and endeavor. But they were so enthusiastic and so absorbed in kirtan, and we got to go out on kirtan with them. We got to get absorbed in their loving ecstasy that they're absorbed in. They're like super, super absorbed in chanting in the streets. this reminds me, it's like of a point that Leela Mundry made. At the Vyasa Puja, she said during the regular days, it's like we're making just very little advancement, and then when festivals come, we get like lots of advancement. So, like, when these people come, like Harinam Ruchi, and these festivals come, we get all this mercy. We get all this Bhajatam Pratipurvakam. It's ecstasy. This is advancement. But then on a day-to-day basis, we're like struggling to chant our rounds. So I was visualizing a picture of like hitting, like our anartas are like a rock that are covering us, and there's like this story of how many hits does it take to break a rock. So it's like you keep hitting the rock and it's slowly cracking it little by little, and then when the festival comes or Harinam Ruchi comes, then it goes and it just melts away for some time. But then we have other rocks too, because we're very covered, so we have to go back to the grind. But this Bhajatam Pratipurvakam is Krishna consciousness. It's not like we have to be like super hard and serious, and this is like what it means to be in Krishna consciousness. It's actually a very loving and joyful process. It's everlasting and joyfully performed. It's not meant to be super, super austere. As actually, we make so much advancement when these people come and chant, and we just go into ecstasy, and our anartas are being burned away effortlessly. But when we're on our own, it takes some effort, and we have to put that in there. But we also need to seek this mercy and this state of love, that melts away our anartas. Last verse I want to quote, is the next verse, 10:11. Teshamevan kam partham aham agyana jam tamaha nashayam yatma bhavasto gyana deepena bhashvata. So to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So this darkness born of ignorance is like our anartas and our demonic mentality, and it gets destroyed with the shining of lamp of knowledge when we're engaged in this Bhajatam Pratipurvakam. Always constantly engaged, repeatedly. And so we have to keep doing this Buddha Yoga, using our intelligence to just keep going forward, keep hearing, keep chanting, keep breaking away at the ice of our anartas. We know that there's this higher reality of Krishna's reality. We know we're not there, we're covered over, and we go through difficulties. We have, like, our sadhana is weak at times, and we get frustrated, we can't remember Krishna. But we have to hang on through those times and also endeavor to become more and more absorbed and saturated with this love, for Krishna, by conscious meditation, not just unconscious engagement and waiting for Krishna to give us his mercy. We also have a say in it, and this is what love means, is we have to be conscious participants in our relationship with Krishna. So it goes both ways. As Acharya Nishta once has used to say, he said that the ball is in our court. Actually, the mercy is all here. We have the temple, the practice, the teachings, the deities, the holy name. Everything is in front of us. We have nice prasadam. So it's actually completely up to us to accept this and become Krishna conscious at once. It's not a matter of waiting for some miracle to happen. It's a matter of us becoming more and more absorbed by constantly striving to improve and develop this conscious mood of love with Krishna. So in that way, we can start to crack away at the darkness that's covering our eternal blissful position with Krishna. So to wrap it back to Shukracharya, so it's easy, like Jaya Nitai said yesterday, it's easy to kind of laugh at Shukracharya's position from afar away. That kind of inspired me from my class to say, like, to look within myself. Like, it's easy to read the Bhagavatam and be like, oh man, he's not a pure devotee. But then it's like, if you look within yourself, that's even a pretty scary place to look how impure I am. So that spurred me to go through this through my notes with the Nartanavritti and go through some of the Bhagavad Gita verses and meditate on that. That's pretty much all I have. It's like a short class, but so maybe you can open to questions, reflections, if anyone wants to add anything.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, very wonderful, transcendentally put together class. There's something that a question I had just regarding like the Nartanavritti portion was it's something that during the seminar I was thinking about too that I kind of forgot for a while, but then you brought it back. Just like it seems like a very slippery slope. Once you start making offenses, you start getting anarthas. And like I was kind of speculating on it, maybe you can confirm, but I really just don't have a solid like answer. Just like because it seems you make an offense, you get some anarthas. Those anarthas make you make more offenses. From those offenses, you get more anarthas, and it seems like a pretty slippery cycle. I'm just wondering, like, is and you even mentioned that the power of anarthas can even like hinder bhakti or like like so just what like where does the power of bhakti overcome the power of anarthas?
But it's the power of offenses that blocks the. The question is that what is the hope if anarthas and offenses are so powerful that we if we make some offenses, then it creates some anarthas, and then it creates the propensity to make more offenses. So it seems like a very slippery slope. Yeah, I would say that is true. It can be a slippery slope. I'm still a super new devotee, so I'm also guarding against this slippery slope. From my understanding, we have so many anarthas and so much offensive mentalities that we don't even know about from even previous lifetimes. And so Maharaj makes the nice point not to get too overwhelmed with the anarthas. Like he says, whenever he speaks about anarthas, the devotees get this overwhelming feeling of like no hope. So it's good to know a little bit about the anarthas, but more so spend our time getting absorbed in Krishna and hearing and chanting about Krishna. This is the answer. It's like that the repeated question of how do we stop making offenses to devotees? How do we give up this mentality to, find fault in devotees? How do we give up this mentality to do these sinful activities? It's like the same question over and over again. The answer is to get more and more absorbed in Bhajatam Pratipurvakam, rendering devotional service and loving ecstasy. We just get more and more absorbed in that, and it melts away everything. If we had faith in that, and it's not very complicated, we just have to get more and more absorbed in that, in the transcendental energy, the transcendental process. So don't focus too much on the nartha.
I have a lot of questions about this topic, but I'll just ask one more. I was reading the Nectar of Devotion, and one of the like regulations of devotional service, it might have been the Nectar of Instruction, but not like having false ecstasy or like thinking you're in ecstasy when you're not. But I'm just curious about like chanting. Maharaj also mentioned chanting offensively with Dravida Prabhu, that chanting offensively is like one of the main way to remove all the anarthas. But like they never explained from like my point of view of how does one chant offensively? Like what is the consciousness one has to be in? Like focusing on the Maha Mantra is one thing, but then you could make the offense of thinking the Maha Mantra is equal or independent to, or just something like that. Maybe someone else could shed light on it too. It's very confusing. Very confusing.
Maybe Mother Krishna Arjuna could speak a little bit about trying to chant without offenses. I guess one thing I've heard is that most of the offenses All the offenses stem from one offense, which is inattentive chanting. If we, if we try to become attentive in our chanting, we realize how offensive we are on the other levels, because it's blocking us from actually getting absorbed in Krishna. It's like we know how beautiful Krishna is. We know that like this eternal blissful life is there. It's like everything is perfect, wish fulfilling trees, desire trees, jewels in the spiritual world. We hear about it, but when we sit down and chant, it's like only for like a split second can we actually think about Krishna. Like even that is like rare. And sometimes we chant six all rounds and don't even get into an absorbed state of consciousness. We're continuing to be inattentive. So if we can focus on attentive chanting, I think that can lead to gradually to in offenseless chanting.
Hare Krishna, Giridhari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
What is this seed that allows one to consciously cultivate loving ecstasy, Priti Purvakam?
See?
What is the catalyst for that cultivation that allows someone to do that? I mean, how does one approach it? Because one may not, to elaborate, one may not practically seem to be able to do that directly, but is there something that helps, that allows one to begin that process of conscious cultivation of that love?
I guess from my experience, it comes from associating with devotees who have it. Like Harinam Ruchi, they came and we were in Chicago. We were like, hands up, you know, the whole time in Kirtan, and just like this big smile on our face, hours on end chanting. So they have it, and they gave us a little taste. So we can hold on to that taste, but it's a little bit difficult to do. Another example from my experience is this. Super exalted Vaishnava who lives in Vrindavan, Dina Bandhu Prabhu. He came to a retreat that I was at in Jagannath Puri, and he started speaking about Krishna, and that's what he does. He speaks about Krishna, and everybody goes into ecstasy because he's in ecstasy all the time. Like he said, this one pastime of like, oh man, I can't think of the name. Krishna's coward boyfriend, the Brahmana boy, not Sudama, in Goloka Vrindavan. He's chubby. Madhu Mangal, yeah. He's telling a story of like how his shika got pulled out or something like that, or some grabbed his shika. And then Dina Bandhu Prabhu, he has like a. His sika is like 2 feet long, and it's like dreadlock sika. And he, in the middle of telling the pastime, he pulls out his sika like super long to like play it out, play out the pastime. And then whenever he says Krishna, he like puts his hand out like this, and he's acting it out. And everything, everyone gets totally absorbed when he speaks in the Krishna katha, the way that he speaks, the way that he chants. So, I guess. That's just a little bit of my experience. We associate with someone who has that. We get a little bit of a glimpse of it.
And just a short question. You mentioned two Bhagavad Gita verses. You mentioned 251 and the second verse, which is related to the material...
miseries.
Yeah, results.
815.
8:15, thank you, Prabhu.
To the answer to your question, how to get, you know, what is the seed of ecstasy? There's the You remember the Sri Umapada Maharaj's class in Anartha Nivruti? He gave a very nice example that how one devotee from German, you know, he got annoyed with one riksha puller in Brijavasi, you know, in Vrindavan. Then he lost his beer bag. You remember that story? So the thing is that the ecstasy comes only if you will be offenseless. When you become offenseless, then only you will get the real test of chanting holy names. And, you know, because also there is a very nice song in Vaishnava song, Ratina Janmila Kena Tai, means I am chanting, I am reading for long times, for long years, but why I am not developing the ecstasy or the bhava towards Krishna? The problem is that because of our offenses. And another thing also, in Romapada Maharaj, he told, while he was giving initiation, he told two points, very, very important points. He told, one is, Krishna will not accept your service if you are offenseless. You are offense. You commit offenses. Number one. Number two, he told, what is that? Sense gratification. These two things, if you continually keep on doing, then Krishna will not accept your service. That's a very nice point Rupa Maharaj gave.
I don't remember him saying that.
Yeah, and again, another point. If you go back to verse number 26, there is a very nice, very important verse. Here it has been mentioned. You can read the translation, verse number 26. 8:19:26, the translation.
A brahmana who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied brahmana decreases, as a fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it.
Wow, that's a very nice point. The spiritual potency of a brahman diminishes, just like pouring the water on the fire. He's giving very nice example. When you become dissatisfied, become very morose, feel very bad mood, you know, if you are not happy with others, if you are not even, then all your spiritual potency, whatever you have achieved by doing some devotional service, that power, potency, goes down. That's a very secret point. So.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful.
I guess there's one comment is like, we have to become free from these offenses before we experience the full ecstasy. But how do we get rid of these offenses? Isn't necessarily by just focusing on the offenses. It's about cultivating this mood of love also, and this absorption with love, and that diminishes the anarthas. Also, not just meditating on anarthas, will the anarthas go away? We have to get absorbed in the service in Krishna consciousness. We don't say, I have to get free from these anarthas and then engage in service with love. No, we have to engage with love and strive to engage with love. At least whatever we have in our hearts, and offer that, whatever we can. And then the anarthas will go away. Slowly. Maybe. No, they will. Anything else? Krishna.
The main point of the class that we make in Giridhari Prabhu of necessity to perform devotional activities with that loving mood was part of getting to that point of going past anatta. So it's a very natural process. The early part of taking up devotional life, it's called the clearing stage. So the cloud, the anattas are described like clouds. So the clouds are needing to be swept aside and cleared. And since you're referencing Jhoram Padaswami, he uses the phrase investing one's consciousness. So one truly puts all one's consciousness into what one is doing, the devotional activity. So that is just a little thought.
Anything else?
I just remember one example about like how you mentioned about practicing bhakti, and then that's how through the purity of bhakti we lose our anarthas. A small example is about how in the initial stages of any devotee's life, or when Prabhupada was preaching to the hippies initially, he never told them to that leave your LSD then chant. He said that chant and you can do that at the same time. And then they got the higher taste of chanting, and then they left all the unwanted stuff. So that's what came in my head about when you mentioned about practicing bhakti while doing it, I don't know, while you're still not pure.
Yeah, we have to focus on that, hang on to that experience of happiness, and seek that experience of happiness with all that we have, that higher state of happiness, and let go of the lower. Thank you. It's 9:24. I was gonna maybe just read like a second of the Bhagavad Gita, if that's okay. Just to go at least to 9:30. So we can do some Bhajatam Pratipurvakam by hearing. So this, we get some sambandha gyan, so we can go further into our relationship with Krishna. 9, I think starts at 14. Yeah. So if we constantly hear the Bhagavad Gita, then we more and more get away from this tendency to not want to surrender to him. So just to end it, I'll read some Bhagavad Gita. 14. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajur Vedas. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seed. O Arjuna, I give heat and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take on birth on the pious heavenly planets of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas only achieve repeated birth and death, like Sukracharya. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. Yeah, we can end there. Alright. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Tagore Premanande.
Just getting.